You know, it's funny how much trust we place in the people we work alongside every single day, right? We tend to think of cyber threats as like these shadowy hackers somewhere far away trying to break in from the outside. But what happens when the risk isn't external? What if it's actually someone already inside? It's a bit unsettling, and that's exactly what we're digging into today.
Yeah, our main source for this deep dive is the brand new Insider Threat Pulse Report. And our mission really is to unpack why insider threats are suddenly such a huge priority for security leaders heading into 2025. We'll look at the different shapes they take, the real challenges companies face trying to spot them, and crucially, how security teams are trying to shift their strategies to deal with these risks as they change. It's not just theoretical stuff. That's the key takeaway early on. I mean, the report lays it out pretty starkly. Over half of organizations, 56% to be exact, had some kind of security incident caused by an insider just in the last year. 56%. So, well, it tells you this isn't just a potential problem. It's happening right now inside the walls.
Wow, 56%. That really puts it into perspective. It's not just a worry, it's a reality for most companies. That certainly explains why everyone's paying so much attention to it again.
It does. And, you know, when you layer on some of the bigger, more organized schemes we're seeing, things like those fraudulent IT worker campaigns run by North Korea, aiming specifically to get their people inside Western tech firms, it shows these aren't just random, isolated incidents anymore. It forces a rethink of the whole strategy.
Okay, so if these risks are getting more common and maybe even more sophisticated, how should we think about what an insider threat actually is? Is it just the classic disgruntled employee, or is it broader now?
It's definitely broader and much more nuanced. It's really important to break down who we mean by insider. The report essentially splits them into two main camps. You've got your malicious insiders, and then you have the negligent or sort of unwitting ones. And critically, it's not always about bad intentions.
Okay, let's start with the malicious insiders. Who are they? What drives them?
Right. These are the people who deliberately misuse the access they've been given. They might be doing it for personal profit, maybe selling company secrets, or perhaps they want to cause actual harm, like deleting vital data or leaking login details for others to use. The motivations can be all over the map: money, revenge, ideology, but the common thread is intentional harm.
Okay, makes sense. Then you have the other group, the negligent or unwitting insiders. That sounds almost harder to deal with in a way, because there's no malice involved.
You've hit on something really important there. These are the folks who put the company at risk entirely by accident. It's often just everyday mistakes, right? Clicking a bad link in an email, maybe misconfiguring a cloud storage bucket, or just not following a security rule because it seems inconvenient. Their actions aren't meant to be harmful, but the consequences can be just as severe: account takeovers, data leaks, you name it. And what's really striking, almost shocking, in the report is how worried security pros are about both. Get this. 97% are concerned about negligent threats. That's almost neck and neck with the 93% worried about malicious ones. It kind of flips the script, showing that carelessness is seen as nearly as big a danger as outright sabotage.
97% for negligent. Wow, that's huge. It really underscores that unintentional errors are a massive headache. So, okay, you've got these two types of insiders. How on earth do security teams actually spot the warning signs, the red flags? It sounds incredibly difficult, like finding that needle in a haystack, but the needle might not even look sharp.
Yeah, it's a tough challenge, no doubt. Teams are really trying to use a layered approach, looking at both technical data and human behavioral signals. The report actually lists the top five red flags that security teams are reporting. Number one is anomalous behavior. This is stuff like weird login times, accessing systems they don't normally use, sudden changes in activity levels, or maybe signs of trying to pull data out.
Right, so deviations from the norm. Someone suddenly downloading massive files at 3 a.m. when they usually work 9 to 5. Makes sense. What's next?
Second is kind of related: excessive data access or downloads. So not just unusual access, but maybe huge volumes of downloads, copying large amounts of sensitive files, or accessing data that's clearly way outside their job needs. Third is attempts to access restricted or unauthorized resources. Think someone trying to bypass security controls, install software they shouldn't, or trying to elevate their own permissions.
Okay, probing boundaries, basically, poking around where they don't belong. And number four.
Number four is suspicious network activity. This could be anything from like excessive personal web browsing on work devices to connecting to known malicious sites or unusual outbound network traffic. And then the fifth one moves more into the human side: behavioral changes. This is trickier, but it could be things like showing extreme anger or making threats during a difficult conversation, like a termination call.
That last one sounds particularly difficult to interpret objectively, right? Behavior is so subjective. I mean, how do you reliably detect intent from someone just seeming stressed or upset?
That's precisely the challenge. Yeah. And it highlights a key point from the report. Things like, say, anomalies found in a background check, or knowing an employee is under personal stress, like financial trouble. These might be considered early flags or contributing factors, but they're rarely definitive proof of malicious intent on their own. Nailing down intent is really more of an interpretive art than it is a precise science. It requires context and careful judgment.
An interpretive art. That's a great way to put it. So, given all this complexity, what are the really big hurdles that security teams are running into day to day? Beyond just spotting flags, what's really stopping them from effectively managing this insider risk?
Well, the absolute core challenge, the one that comes up again and again, is trying to separate the real threats from just normal, everyday employee activity, especially when they're drowning in alerts. Teams get absolutely flooded with data, with telemetry. They're often overwhelmed by alerts from their tools, things like data loss prevention or DLP systems, or their user and entity behavior analytics, the UEB tools. A lot of these alerts turn out to be noise, false positives. This leads straight to alert fatigue, where analysts get burned out and real threats might actually get missed in the flood.
Right. The classic signal-to-noise problem, but amplified. I can definitely see how frustrating that would be. What other major roadblocks are there?
Another big one is simply limited visibility. You've got data stuck in silos across different departments. HR data here, security logs there, identity information somewhere else. Plus, you have the whole issue of shadow IT employees using apps or services without official approval. It makes getting a single correlated view of risk incredibly hard. Then there are just plain tooling gaps or reliance on manual work. Maybe a company doesn't have a central SIEM system, you know, a security information and event management platform to pull everything together. Or they lack automation, so investigations involve tons of manual digging, which is slow and error-prone.
And I imagine there's a people problem, too, beyond just individual actions like getting organizational support.
Oh, absolutely. Getting buy-in from the business, setting clear policies that people actually follow, and overcoming cultural resistance. These are massive hurdles. Trying to educate executives, HR, legal, and just the general workforce about why this matters can be tougher than implementing the tech, especially with privacy concerns or, in some regions, works councils being involved. And underpinning all of this, resource constraints, small teams, tight budgets, and the fact that these investigations can be really complex and involve multiple departments. It all stretches security resources incredibly thin. It's a constant battle.
It really sounds like a multifaceted, incredibly difficult problem set. Let's maybe zero in on one specific example you mentioned earlier that the report highlights, that North Korean fraudulent IT worker issue. That sounds particularly sneaky and, well, concerning.
It really is. And it's fascinating how it came up as such a high priority, especially for CISOs at larger companies. What's really interesting is that some organizations are now actually rewriting their HR and recruiter playbooks, specifically to try to spot the patterns used by these fake North Korean applicants. It's a clear sign that these kinds of geopolitical threats are forcing totally new levels of partnership between HR and security teams. They have to work together on this.
So HR and security needing to collaborate much more closely, how's that actually working out on the ground? Are they building integrated systems or?
Well, the report shows a bit of a mixed picture there. On the one hand, a big majority, 87%, said they do collaborate with HR or recruiting in some way for insider threat defense. So the intent is there. But, and this is a big but, 60% said that this coordination is mostly manual. We're talking, you know, informal chats, maybe some ad hoc emails back and forth, creating manual tickets. There aren't really smooth automated workflows connecting them. Background checks were mentioned as the most common point of collaboration, but even the thoroughness of those checks varies a lot. So huge room for improvement in making that link more systematic.
Okay, so the connection is happening, but it's often pretty manual and maybe not as robust as it could be. And there was a quote in the report, I think, from Charles Carmichael at Mandiant that just really drove home the sheer scale of this North Korean worker problem.
Yes, it's quite a startling quote. He basically said, literally every Fortune 500 company has at least dozens, if not hundreds, of applications for North Korean IT workers. And he added, nearly every CISO that I've spoken to about the North Korean IT worker problem has admitted they've hired at least one North Korean IT worker, if not a dozen or a few dozen. He just hammers home how pervasive this specific tactic is, how challenging it is to catch.
Wow. Every Fortune 500. Dozens or hundreds of applications. That's staggering. It makes you wonder how many actually got through. So faced with all these challenges, the different types of insiders, the detection difficulties, these sophisticated state-sponsored campaigns, what are security teams actually using right now? What's in their toolkit? And where are the gaps leading to future opportunities?
Well, the typical toolkit, according to the report, really relies on a few core technologies. SIEM platforms, those security information and event management systems, are often the backbone. They try to pull together logs and events from everywhere, endpoints, networks, cloud services. Then you often see data loss prevention, DLP tools, which are good for finding specific instances of sensitive data being mishandled. User and entity behavior analytics, UEBA, tries to baseline normal behavior and flag deviations. Endpoint detection and response, EDR, gives detailed visibility into what's happening on user devices, which can feed into risk scoring. And teams also try to pull in feeds from HR systems, identity management tools, and external threat intelligence to enrich the picture. But as we discuss, the biggest reported pain points are still around automation and, crucially, integration. Getting all these tools to talk to each other effectively and provide context for insider threats is the real struggle.
Right. So you've got all these pieces, but they're not always forming a coherent picture, especially for insider threats. It feels like maybe the traditional ways of detecting things, relying heavily on spotting weird behavior or manual checks, often just come too late in the game.
That's exactly right. And that leads to the critical question. How can we get ahead of it? How do we get earlier warnings? The interesting angle here is that most insider threats, whether they're malicious or just negligent, usually involve some kind of identity misuse at their core. And this is where identity intelligence comes in. By looking at identity information gathered from outside the organization, think data from malware infections circulating in the wild, credentials found in third-party data breaches, phishing kits targeting employees, you can often spot risk before it manifests internally. It helps fill a huge blind spot left by traditional internal monitoring. You can potentially see the risk developing much earlier.
Okay, so shifting from purely internal behavioral monitoring to incorporating external identity risk signals, that sounds like a significant shift. And this identity intelligence can help in a few specific ways, can it? Like with stopping fraudulent hires.
Exactly. First, it can help detect those fraudulent job applicants, people using stolen or completely fabricated identities, like the North Korean IT workers we talked about, who might otherwise sail through standard background checks. Second, it can help identify potential malicious insiders by uncovering hidden links. Maybe an employee's personal email address shows up on dark web forums associated with criminal activity, revealing an intent you'd never see internally.
And third, and this is huge for the negligence side, it helps detect compromised legitimate users. You can see if an employee's work credentials or active session cookies have been stolen by malware circulating outside your network. This identifies employees who are unwittingly posing a risk because their accounts are essentially compromised. That's fascinating. It really connects the external threat landscape directly to internal risk through the lens of identity. So, if organizations want to modernize their approach and leverage these kinds of insights, what are the practical steps they should be taking?
Okay, first step, elevate visibility with identity intelligence. Don't just rely on internal behavioral analytics, which, as we said, are often lagging indicators. Start incorporating external identity risk signals, the digital exhaust, darknet exposure data, as an early warning system. See the risk before the behavior even happens internally.
Get ahead of the curve. Makes sense. But that sounds like potentially even more data. How do you avoid just adding to the alert fatigue problem?
Great question. That leads to the second step. Prioritize quality over quantity. Teams are already swamped. The key is to focus on high-fidelity identity signals, clear indicators of compromise or verified links to malicious infrastructure. These signals cut through the noise, reduce false positives, and help analysts quickly understand if they're dealing with someone negligent, compromised, or truly malicious.
Okay, focus on the signals that really matter. What about that crucial entry point, new hires and vendors?
Absolutely critical. Step three, strengthen pre-access checks with darknet intelligence. We know malicious actors can bypass traditional background screening, so vet new hire identities, vendor accounts, contractors before you grant them access. Look for ties to known fraud, criminal forums, or adversarial infrastructure. It's about preventing the threat from getting inside in the first place.
Proactive prevention, love it. And once you do detect something using these methods, how do you make sure it leads to swift action?
That's step four. Close the loop between detection and action. Manual handoffs and delays are dangerous. Integrate these high-fidelity identity risk signals directly into your security workflows, your SIEM, your SOAR platform, even ticketing systems. Surface the actionable alerts automatically and, where possible, trigger automated responses like forcing a password reset or temporarily suspending access. Reduce the noise, speed up the response.
Streamline the whole process. And finally, it sounds like none of this works without that strong link between departments we touched on earlier.
Exactly. Step 5 is foundational. Unite security and HR under a shared playbook. Insider risk inherently crosses these boundaries. You need to build clear, ideally automated workflows that connect identity risk signals to core business processes from the moment someone applies, onboarding, through their employment lifecycle, and right up to when they leave, offboarding. This creates shared accountability and ensures continuous monitoring, making the program much more resilient.
Okay, so pulling it all together, what's the big picture here, the main takeaway? It seems undeniable that insider threats, whether they stem from genuine mistakes or deliberate malice, are just a systemic risk baked into how we work now. And things like remote work, just the sheer sprawl of our digital identities everywhere, plus these organized infiltration efforts, they're all amplifying the problem.
That's spot on. This isn't an issue companies can afford to put on the back burner or just treat passively anymore. And the report shows that the industry recognizes this. It found that 67%, two-thirds of security teams, are actively planning to significantly upgrade their insider threat programs within the next 12 months. That's a pretty strong signal that this is moving way up the priority list.
A huge majority planning upgrades. That definitely speaks volumes. It really highlights the urgency. So maybe a final thought for everyone listening. In this world where we're so interconnected, where our digital identities are constantly interacting with organizations, what does this changing landscape of insider threats mean for how you think about trust online and in the workplace? And maybe what's your own role, consciously or unconsciously, in either strengthening or weakening an organization's security from the inside? Something to think about.